What kind of beer is this?
This is Love Child number 5. It's a barrel-aged Flanders Red. It's a blend of sour beers.
Would you mind passing that over to me?
Absolutely.
So that I can give it a little whiff? I'm curious about how these sour beers smell.
I would suggest more than whiffing. I would go in for a taste, too.
Well, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. We'll be tasting later in the show, but I'm gonna go ahead and just give it a whiff. It smells like beer.
Good.
Should it smell more sour than regular beer?
You know, I think the aroma isn't so much sour. There's a slight acidity that you're going to pick up, but for me, this beer, I get more like kind of like underripe strawberry or like a tart cherry. Kind of figgy, plummy aroma is what I get.
I'm here with Jeremy Danner of Boulevard Brewery, and as much as I wish we were out on a patio on a Friday afternoon, it's still Thursday morning, and last I knew it was raining out. So we're in the indoor studios of KCUR, but we are going to be trying some beer. I'm Gina Kaufman, this is Central Standard, and today we're catching up on the sour beer trend. Jeremy Danner, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
We're also joined by Brian Buckingham of Cinderblock Brewery. Hi, Jeremy. Hi, Brian.
Good morning.
You guys are both brewers. I can't help it. Would you say that sour beer is starting to become a little bit of a trend in Kansas City right now?
I would say it's definitely catching on in Kansas City. It's been more of a bigger trend, you know, on the coast for quite some time. And as people's beer palates evolve and as education gets greater in Kansas City and we have more breweries opening, doing cool things, sour beer is something that's definitely becoming more popular and more accepted.
I would agree with Jeremy on that. I think it's starting to blow up a little bit in Kansas City. People are getting a little bit more adventurous with tasting beer. So, you know, you still have some naysayers and whatnot, but I think, you know, a lot of times, especially at our brewery, when people try beer for the first time, one of our sours, 9 times out of 10, they're really surprised how much they enjoy it. So,
now, sour beer is not just beer that happens to have a taste that a person might happen to call sour. It's an actual different kind of beer. How is sour beer different from other kinds of beer, first of all, for the taster?
I think on my experience alone is you're getting more tart, more acidic, a lot more puckering on some of the beers. Some are a little mellower than the others, but for the average craft beer drinker who's looking for a malt build or a hop build or the IPA, these beers are a lot more complex, I think. So you're getting a lot more flavor profile when you're drinking these beers.
How would you say that it's different for the brewer? I mean, how is the process different?
In the initial process, the brewing of the wort, and that's the liquid that we ferment to become beer, that's pretty much the same. But what really comes into play is the aging or the souring process itself. So most breweries at Boulevard, we're aging our sour beer in a variety of vessels. We're using previously used whiskey or wine barrels. We're using a stainless vessel. And then we have what's called a fooder. It's essentially a giant oak barrel that previously held wine. And we're inoculating these barrels with a bacteria called lactobacillus and a wild yeast strain called Brettanomyces. So we're intentionally adding things to the beer that you would normally try to avoid if you're brewing what might be referred to as a clean beer, like our pale ale. You know, tastes very clean. It's all about the malt. It's all about cascade hops. But these beers, it really becomes about the bacteria and the microorganisms that you're using. And I think bacteria, when you say that about beer, it kind of freaks people out because we've been taught that bacteria is bad. We use antibacterial soap and antibacterial, say, hand sanitizer, but bacteria is good for you. It's in your body. It helps you digest food. And basically, these bacteria we're adding to the beer are doing the same thing that the bacteria in your body does. They're consuming sugars and starches and creating lactic acid that provides that really pleasant sourness.
Brian, I've read that this is a risky kind of beer to make, sour beer. It's expensive, time-consuming, and not guaranteed to please the crowds when all is said and done. But can you walk us through the expensive and time-consuming part?
We don't really like to talk about expense with beer. For me at Cinderblock, I've always been a pub brewer, so this is the first brewery I've worked at to where I can play with sour, play with Brett, PDO, things like that. And Bryce Shafter, who's the owner, he is, you know, he's wonderful about that. He loves that kind of thing. So to start our sour program at the brewery, it took some research on cleaning. When I move a sour beer into a tank from a barrel, say, I clean that tank, and then I break the tank down completely, put on sour fittings.
Sour fittings?
Yeah, so gaskets, valves, carb stones, all that. I actually have separate fittings for when we're doing sour beers. We have separate hoses, separate pumps, and then cleanup is pretty extensive, mostly because I don't want to contaminate our brewery.
This is interesting to me. I've worked briefly in a cheese kitchen, and you have to separate anything that's touched a blue cheese pretty much in the kind of the same way you're talking about. Is there a relationship between what you would be doing in a cheese kitchen with blue cheeses and what you would be doing in a brewery with sour beers?
Maybe. I'm not really sure on that. Jeremy might know more on that.
I would imagine. So we do the same process whenever we bottle a run of a beer that has active lactobacillus or active Brettanomyces. We replace, we call it all the soft parts, any gaskets, any hoses, break everything down completely. And we've gone so far, we don't have any of our sour beer aging in our brewery. We have some caves that we've rented about 20 minutes outside of town. And we have a wall between our sour barrels and our clean barrels because we're, I wouldn't say we're scared, we're respectful. You know, I think there are a lot of new breweries starting up making sour beer, and they have their sour tank right next to a clean tank. And, like, you should really, you know, be careful with that. Don't be scared, but think about
why?
What you're doing.
I mean, I guess my question is, I mean, it's why the fear or respect, whichever one it is? Why a wall?
I mean, Brettanomyces in particular, it's a yeast strain. It's people call it a wild yeast strain because it produces kind of funky, earthy flavors.
Wild yeast.
Yeah, in wine, it's a definite off flavor in wine.
You see, picture like yeasts running wild through a forest.
The horns, yeah. It's an odd thing, though, because it's so hard to get rid of. It's resistant to a lot of cleaning techniques. So what we found the best way to do is just get it very hot. But there's actually there's a brewery in California called Russian River. And a couple, Natalie and Vinny, own and run that brewery, and they play with sour beer and Brettanomyces, and they're not welcome at the wineries in the area because the winemakers are so concerned about the Brettanomyces that's on them and in their hair and their skin. They're not welcome at these wineries. They like them, but they say, you can't come see us.
Are they working on, like, a movement to get greater understanding and acceptance?
I think we all are. I think The biggest thing comes with educating people about what sour beer is. And I think right now we're at a place where people refer to sour as a style. But for me, sour is an attribute that can exist in a wide variety of styles. So it links them. But at the same time, you know, the two beers that Bucky and I have brought are similar in their acidity. But it's not necessarily accurate to make a comparison between the two. But for me, it's about teaching people, you know, that sour beer is okay. But I think it's always important to warn someone. Or kind of give them a heads up before you hand them a sour beer. Like, hey, this is a sour beer. It's going to change the way you feel about what you thought beer could taste like. Because, you know, as you could attest, if you've never had a sour beer, this doesn't taste like what you think it might taste like.
What's the history of sour beer? Where does this brewing tradition come from?
So, I mean, if you go back in history, in, you know, like farmhouse brewing, or, you know, some of the first beers that would have been made by nomadic peoples, all of their beer would have been sour. They lacked an understanding of sanitation. They didn't know that there was yeast in the air. If you go back, each family would have what they referred to as a magic stick. And this was a stick that they would put into the wort after they'd finished mashing the grains. And oftentimes it didn't louder off the grain. So the bacteria that was present there was added, but this magic stick was added, and that is what started fermentation, they thought. And actually what was happening is their particular house yeast happened to live on that stick because it had been carried over. And a lot of the beers that were brewed, even styles today that aren't sour, like a porter, traditionally that would have been, there would have been some acidity, there would have been, you know, kind of a funky, earthy character from Brettanomyces. But now we're taking these yeast strains and these bacteria, and we're controlling them and creating, in a very technological way, in some breweries, beer that is very much rustic in nature.
What do you mean by rustic?
When I say rustic, I mean just these raw kind of, like, it seems uncontrolled, but it's actually very controlled because we're listening to the beer as it ages. You know, we're tasting the beer from the barrel and figuring out what it needs. Does it need to be at a warmer temperature? Does it need to be blended with this type of beer? Do we need to dump a particular barrel? So It's about kind of letting the beer do its thing, but at the same time, we're using all the technology that we have access to make the sour beer better and help us better understand the process.
How long have you been brewing sour beer at Boulevard?
We've been brewing sour beer for about 6 years now. We're on our fifth release of Love Child, which is a beer that I've brought to share. We started very small with just a few barrels. I just started at the brewery, and we went to a blackberry field and picked blackberries and came back and stuffed those into a barrel full of beer. And there's, you know, naturally occurring wild yeast and bacteria on the flesh of the skin or on the flesh of the fruit. So we just threw that right in, and that's how we inoculated some of our first sour beer. We've since gone on to, you know, we have a house lactobacillus culture and a house Brettanomyces strain that we use. But, you know, Bucky touched on earlier talking about the expense of it. It's tough to say to a brewery owner, the beer that we're brewing today won't be ready for 6 years. And you have to have a brewery owner or a business manager that understands that it's worth that time in the barrel, it's worth that time in the tank or whatever it takes to get to the final result that we have today.
That first taste after 6 years must be so scary. When I work in the kitchen on something for like an hour, I'm kind of afraid of what if this isn't good.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Well, has anything surprised you about the process of making these sour beers?
You know, I think the what's been most surprising to us is how consistent some of the barrels produce certain beers. We have barrels that we really like that we enjoy. Dustin Jameson, who's kind of our barrel wrangler, which is an awesome title.
Yeah, it is.
He kind of shepherds the barrels, and he has them grouped into lots of similar flavor. And to me, it's always amazing that the beer from the Fooder or the beer from this group of wine barrels or that group of whiskey barrels, how consistently they taste when you bring samples in. That I think that's surprising for this. What we, you know, I keep saying wild yeast and bacteria, but they do their job and they do it well if we take care of them.
And Brian, what about you? What surprised you?
I would have to agree with Jeremy. Like, especially when you're using a barrel more than once, the consistency that you can get off of that, and then you know, just the joy of tasting all the beers as you're watching them grow and age, that's just a lot of fun.
Central Standards heading off to a break. When we return, we'll taste a few of these sour beers. We've got some from Boulevard and Cinder Block Breweries, and we'll take your calls. Tell us about your first time trying a sour beer. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman here with Jeremy Danner and Brian Buckingham. They are both local brewers, and they're schooling us in sour beer. It's all the rage, in case you missed that. Call 816-235-2888 if you have a sour beer story or recommendation of your own. I'm getting my first sour beer experience right now, and I want to hear about yours. 816-235-2888. In a little while, we'll be switching gears to talk about Midtown history, so don't put it off. I have brought in intern Andrea Tudhope. She has a great palate, and she is not going to be hosting a talk show still after drinking beer, so she'll be able to taste a little more, perhaps. Andrea, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We also have, as we mentioned, Jeremy Danner of Boulevard Brewery and Brian Buckingham of Cinder Block Brewery. So, Brian, what have you brought for us?
We brought our Lucis Neutri, which is Latin for freak of nature. This is our farmhouse peach sour. We aged this I want to say for about 11 months in Chardonnay and Merlot barrels.
I should say this one actually does smell a little bit sour and a little bit like peaches.
There is a peach and apricot puree that we added to the barrels as well. We added Brettanomyces, Pediococcus, and Lactobacillus. You should get a nice big tart beginning, and then some acidity and sourness on the back of your palate. That's what I'm getting.
The color of it looks a little like a wheat beer to me.
It is not per se a wheat beer. I think a lot of our color that we're getting from this beer is from the peach and apricot puree. There is some wheat in it, but I would not say it's a wheat beer.
We'll get to those distinctions in a second, but let's all give it a taste. Bottoms up, crew. It is sour. Like, I'm sorry. I know that that's not
We're not
surprising.
Kidding. It's sour, yeah.
But, you know, like, it's not like Sour Patch Kids sour, but it's on the way.
Yeah, this is our second offering of sour beers that we've done. We did our KC Weiss, a Berliner Weiss, which is a sour wheat, which is a lot heavier sour tartness on the palate that we did last year. So this one's a little bit more subdued.
Andrea, what are your thoughts?
I think it's nice to taste something that's fruity and not sweet or too fruity. I like it. I think it's really good. I don't know.
I think it's good too.
It kind of reminds me of kombucha. Have you ever had?
I've never had kombucha.
Okay. So. Has anybody here had it?
I have. Yeah.
I have.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same bacteria that you're getting in kombucha. It's lactobacillus. It's lactic acid producing. But the difference is in kombucha, you have what's called a SCOBY. It's a symbiotic community of bacteria and yeast. So you have something else happening to you. You get kind of funky flavors in addition to that.
You know how when you taste something like really spicy or really sour or just that has kind of a kick to it, there's that immediate reaction. And then when it settles down, you can kind of really taste it a little bit more. I think that I'm getting some of that effect with this beer.
Yeah, it's not a big lingering tartness or sourness at all. So,
yeah, that fades. Well, let's go ahead and talk to Elliot, who's called us from Overland Park. Hi, Elliot.
Hi, I was just wondering about how the brewers think about sour beers in terms of pairing with food and other options that kind of relate to that, like whether it be using these as something that can replace wine or actually like augment a meal.
So pairing foods with sour beer, what do you guys recommend? First of all, Brian, what do you recommend with your Freak of Nature beer, which in Latin is what again?
Lucis Nutri, if you want to get fancy. With this beer, I think it would go great with a nice summertime salad with some citrus on it. Might go well with, you know, with some blue cheese as well. But I would go with something lighter on the food side, nothing real heavy or anything like that. So,
Jeremy, thoughts on pairings with sour beers?
I think you have to consider, when we think of beer and food pairing, we're always thinking about the intensity of the beer and the intensity of the food. And I think because a sour beer can be, you know, such a presence flavor-wise and then kind of the mouthfeel, I like to go with Love Child Number 5 or our Love Child series of beers. I like kind of the really funky, gooey cheese, you know, the kind of cheese where you look at it and it kind of splits open and
yes.
It spreads on the plate.
I love that cheese.
Yeah, I love the way that the Love Child, there's kind of that big fruity character that kind of offsets the funkiness of the cheese, but at the same time you get a marriage of funky flavors from the Panamiasis. So I think that's what I dig.
A marriage of funky flavors. Well, why don't we go ahead and try the beer that you've brought in? So Boulevard Brewery, we've got... What is it that we're drinking again?
This is Love Child Number 5. So this is a beer that was released in April in bottles only. I had a few kegs that I've poured at festivals around town, but you shouldn't expect to see it on tap on a regular basis. But what this beer is it's a blend of several ages or vintages of a sour Flanders red. So we've brewed the beer multiple years and separated it into previously used whiskey and wine barrels, stainless tanks, and a fooder, and then we blend all that back together. And what we're trying to do in the blend is create what we feel is a blend of the best sour beer we have on hand. So it's 8.2 ABV. IBUs, when you're talking about sour beer, are really irrelevant. It's not about hops at all. It's not about bitterness. So what we try to do is showcase kind of notes of tart cherry and strawberry, kind of like that underripe green strawberry a little bit. And the beer itself is very fruity, but there's no fruit in the beer, which I think is a very cool expression of the barrel character and kind of that wild fermentation that occurs.
Okay, I'm going to try it. That is so different from the other beer we tasted. Okay, I'm going to work on putting this to words. Andrea, help me out.
Well, I definitely can kind of pick up on the underripe fruit characteristics that you were kind of describing. I think it's nice that it's not like, I don't know, I tend to think of like lemony. When I think of sour beers, I think of lemon,
sure.
And it's nice to kind of pick up on other acidic flavors. Like there are so many fruits that provide an acidic flavor, but we kind of automatically think of lemon.
It's a little mellower, and it reminds me a little bit of yogurt, which I do not know if that is a weird thing to say.
Not at all. It's the exact same bacteria that makes yogurt sour. It's the same bacteria that they're using to make sauerkraut. So it's totally not weird to get, you know, a similar flavor.
I think both of these beers like have a savory, I'm picking up on like a savory flavor, and same with the smell too, which I think is really interesting.
I think just the acidity, you know, and Bucky touched on kind of the puckering that happens. There's this reaction that occurs in your mouth, and you feel it, you know, back. It helps me grow sideburns is what I tell people. You feel it like back in your jaw, and it's just this sensation. So I think that kind of it creates, it's a very dry, lighter bodied beer, but it creates a sensation of being bigger than it really is because of the flavor and what happens in your mouth when you drink the beer.
I would say that's true of both of these beers, that they are kind of, I don't know, the color in both of them is kind of like intense and saturated in a way, and it made me think that maybe they were going to feel heavier than they do.
I mean, I think what benefits especially our beer, and maybe Bucky can talk on this too, but we at Boulevard, we like beer that has higher carbonation for this type of style, and especially in beers that are higher ABV. So these beers have a higher level of CO2 than what you're going to see in a regular beer, and because of that, it does have kind of a fluffy, effervescent mouthfeel.
Yeah, I think, you know, on a typical ale, you're, you know, for the homebrewers that are listening would understand the CO2 volumes. For your typical ale, you're looking at, you know, 2.5 to 2.8 on CO2 volumes. And, you know, we're carbing this beer at about 3.1 volumes. So it's going to give a lot more pop and a lot more dancing on the tongue.
We have a call from a home brewer, so Uh-oh. Let's go talk to John in Overland Park. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
I'm fantastic. I just have a quick question. What do you guys do about selecting your hops when it comes to sour beers? Since these, you know, beers require, you know, focus on the yeast, and hops can, you know, certain hops or a certain amount of hops can hinder that process since they have that preservative antimicrobial quality. I mean, what do you guys do about that?
On our end, we're really kind of like Jeremy said, the hops are definitely not the showcase of sour beers. So we're looking for low alpha acid, and we're looking for a very low IBU. So I think on this beer, we're only something like 17 IBUs as compared to...
What are IBUs?
International Bittering Units. So it's a range from basically 0 to 100, but brewers anymore are going well over 100 on some beers, and it's just your bittering units in the beer, your flavor, your aromas, and your actual bittering units. So, you know, like our IPA's 90 IBUs, and this one's, I think, 17. So we're not, we're just adding the hops just for a little effervescence, I think. So the way I like to describe hops are, it's just kind of like the salt and pepper, garlic when you're cooking, you know, it's the spice that you're throwing into the beer. So, but again, sour beers are more, you know, looked at for the tartness and acidity, so.
Who else is making sour beer in Kansas City?
Well, Crane Brewing Company, when they get their doors open, I know they're going to be focusing primarily on sour beers. And Michael is making some phenomenal, if you haven't had a chance to try them at Fest, he's making some phenomenal sour beers. So,
and that's Crane Brewing?
Yeah.
I think Torn Label had one they released called, was it Tongue Lash or Tongue Lashing?
Yeah.
Was a nice sour beer. They actually, I think they dry hopped that beer, so it was a sour beer that featured hot flavor and aroma. And then I think McCoy's, they typically brew a Goza, and then they have what they call a blackberry tart. So our two breweries actually aren't the first breweries in Kansas City to make sour beer.
What do you think that sour beer becoming more commonplace or more just a part of the drinking landscape in Kansas City, what do you think that that might change for people, like as far as cuisine in general? Is it going to be a game changer?
I think so. I think a lot of people, you know, we'll still encounter people at a beer fest who will walk up and say, I don't really like beer. And to me, that's like saying, I don't like dogs. You just haven't met the right dog or you haven't had the right beer. So I think this is going to change the way people think about beer, because these are beers that don't taste like any beer they've ever had before.
Jeremy Danner, this has been fun.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And Brian Buckingham, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
When we return, we'll hear how Midtown Kansas City has developed its unique character. If you live in Midtown and have a question or story about the history in your midst, go ahead and chime in, 816-235-2888.